Hi, welcome to Holden Village. Today is Saturday, June the 15th, 1996. In the fireside room this afternoon, our speaker is Ingrid Christiansen. Today's session is entitled, Whose Story Is This Anyway? Let's listen in.
And I'm going to be reading you a story today. I should warn you that today is a day when you'll get a story read to you, so prepare yourselves, and if you're going to be bored by that, you could leave. It would be all right. The story is a Jane Smiley short story in this book of hers called The Age of Grief, which is a book of her short stories. The particular story is called The Pleasure of Her Company. I wish I could offer you tea and afghans and more light, maybe a fire. Sort of a cool day today, but I can't. But anyhow, hope you'll get comfortable and settle in for a nice story, and then we'll talk about it. Before I read it to you, I'd like to tell you a few things about it, because I think it sometimes helps when you're hearing a story for the first time to hear a few things about the way it's going to go. There are not many characters, so I didn't write them on the board, but now I'm having second thoughts. The main character is, is a woman called Florence, and she's the narrator. So we'll hear about Florence, and then there's a pair of characters who are married to each other called Franny and Philip. And we hear a lot about them. Then Florence gets a boyfriend, and her boyfriend is called Byron. Brian. And there's a woman in it called Helen Mearden. I think Helen Mearden is the only person that is regularly referred to by both of her names. So those are the characters. There's a phenomena in this story that we've been talking about the last couple days in my session, so it's sort of fortuitous. So I'd like you to be listening for this, too. In the story, there's a lot of talk about the importance of telling our story. There are characters who tell their stories. There are characters who don't tell their stories. There are characters who are great listeners. There are characters who are not. And the effect on the storyteller of the listener is clear. So it's nice because that's something that we've actually been talking about in these sessions the last few days. So it's sort of a nice picking up of that theme in somebody's work of art. What I think is interesting, there are a lot of interesting things about this story. Jane Smiley, you know, is a wonderful author, and she's written lots of interesting things. She's written A Thousand Acres and Moo and Ordinary Love and Goodwill, a book called Barn Blind, an interesting book called Duplicate Keys, and I liked her book called The Greenlanders, although lots of people say it's too long and too boring, but I found it entrancing, so to each his own, I guess. This story is about a marriage, and I would like it if afterwards we could talk a little bit about one of the central questions about this marriage, and that question, I think, is, how much do you talk about your marriage outside the marriage? When you're married, should you say nothing about your marriage to anybody? Or if you're going to talk about it, how much do you talk about it? Is it a betrayal of the marriage to talk about it? Does it weaken the marriage to talk about it? Does it strengthen you and weaken the marriage to talk about it? Or does it strengthen the marriage? Would a marriage be better off to let the light of day in and let other people know what some of the dynamics of it are? I think it raises that question up. So that's something you might be thinking about. Who loves who is an interesting question in this story. Does everybody know who loves who? Who's jealous of whom? We talked a day or two ago in one of my sessions about when you're telling a story, the importance of space, the space that the story is is cast in, the different spaces and how they're described. What's significant about the spaces described, the locations that are in the story? And I think that in this story, that is a good and important element of it. Then the questions of intimacy, which I just talked about a little bit. What is intimacy? What constitutes intimacy? How do you know when you're getting intimacy? And then there are some things about gender roles in here. Are these classic gender roles? Do the men act like men and the women act like women? Do they cross over? Is it important whether you obey society's norms about how you should behave? There are a few symbols. I think in the beginning there's a symbol that is so stunning and smashing that you can't miss it, and that's the symbol of a wedding dress. You'll run into a wedding dress fairly early on. And then I think these spaces that the story takes place in really are symbolic. And I think the importance of possessions, things. What role do things play in these people's lives? So with that said, that's probably more than enough to say about this story. I will go ahead and read it, which will take about a half an hour, and then we'll talk about it. And we can talk not only about the story itself, but about the issues that the story brings up for our own lives. So that is something that you might be thinking about too. So Jane Smiley's story, The Pleasure of Her Company. When Florence comes up the sidewalk toward her duplex, she can see that the large Victorian house just to the south has new owners. It is the one lovely place on her otherwise undistinguished block, porched, corniced, many-peaked, and recently painted Nordic blonde with piqué white trim. Each of these last few evenings she has admired, as she does tonight, how neatly the trim glows in the twilight. She threads her way past boxes and pieces of furniture the owners have left on the sidewalk. There are two piles of women's clothing. Dishes and cutlery are stacked beside the curb, and a slender-legged plant stand supports two ferns and a grape ivy. A brown box, its lid agape, contains the Oxford English Dictionary, abridged edition, and two Mexican cookbooks. Draped over the back of a kitchen chair is a white dress, perhaps a wedding dress, its bodice shaped into fullness with blue tissue paper. One of its stiff lace cap sleeves has fallen off the hanger. As Florence notices this, a breeze lifts the skirt. She rearranges the sleeve on the hanger and, shy of being caught, hurries the rest of the way home. In the morning, when she turns with her cup of coffee to gaze out the window of her kitchen, the items are still on the lawn. The dress has fallen off the chair and lies spread on the green grass like a snow angel. While she is at work, everything disappears, and that night, at last, there are lights in the windows. The stained glass she has coveted for years bejewels the darkness. There is more to covet, or at least envy, when she finally meets the Howards, Philip and Franny. Two handmade orange rugs are flung on the hardwood floors, and three or four large paintings, stretched but unframed, furnish the wide walls. There are plants. Mostly, however, there is space. So much pale floor that the rooms, as she looks through to the back porch, fit across one another like layers. Inexhaustible, promising, culminating in sunlight. Franny has copper-colored eyes, winged brows, and short, springy hair that she obviously does no more to than wash into shape. She asks Florence to sit at the round maple table for tea. Everything about Franny, from her clumsiness with the teacups to her delight with the muffins Florence has brought for housewarming, is inviting. There is a footstep, and Franny glances up, then takes out another plate. "Hello," says Philip. But before he sits down, he strides around the periphery of the room, stopping twice to admire the walls and floors, to look through the open door to the front porch, to smile and put his hands on his hips. Franny says, "Philip still can't believe we own this place. Last night I found him out on the front porch holding on to the gingerbread and staring at the stained glass." Philip sits at the table and leans toward Florence on his elbows. "Have you ever house hunted? You wouldn't believe what some people do to their houses. I went to one place that looked rather charming from the outside, you know, but inside they'd cut doorways where they shouldn't have been and added on this room at the back, plastic paneling, spongy rug like fungus. It wasn't a bad house at one time. I went outside and threw up in a trash barrel." "Philip took his house hunting very seriously," said Franny. "You see how people live," he butters a muffin. Philip, it turns out, was in high school with Florence's brother. Philip tells them that no two strangers in this nation are separated by more than 5 intermediate acquaintances. When he finds out that Florence is a nurse, he asks her if she saves a life every day, and when Franny mentions her job, directing foreign exchange programs and charter flights for the local university, he says, "Importing exotica, exporting domestica." He obviously expects to fill air and space, and he is quite handsome, but it is Franny that Florence can't help looking at. She sits smiling over the conversation like a child over a jack-in-the-box, waiting to be surprised into laughter. She makes Florence long to say something hilarious. Florence goes next door, thinking that she shouldn't really be visiting again so soon. She has been there every day, sometimes twice, since they moved in 2 weeks ago. She brings a 1/4 pound of a new kind of tea, knowing that it is almost a bribe, and shouts a comical "Yoo-hoo!" as she crosses the threshold. Franny giggles from the side porch and responds in kind. The giggle is a tremendous relief to Florence, because she is ready to detect signs of boredom and exasperation in Franny's first glance at her. The giggle allays her fears, and she grins as she pulls out a maple chair beside the maple table once again, investing the moment with her fullest, most tangible pleasure at being liked. Philip isn't there. Florence talks about the hospital, where she is a nurse in pediatrics. Already, Franny has learned the names of the doctors, the secretaries, the other nurses, and her evident interest renders Florence almost eloquent. She talks about the medical student she's been seeing, too young, and the photographer she is seeing now, too self-absorbed. She talks about recipes and about being on the pill and having gained and lost 30 pounds in 4 months. Franny's questions and responses create such a vivid image in her mind, and her smiles and rejoinders are so appropriate, that Florence grows ecstatic with conversation. She feels as though her words leap at Franny before Franny even finishes speaking. She follows Franny around the house, talking. Franny sweeps the floor, puts away the breakfast dishes, straightens out one of the orange rugs, makes their bed. While Franny is balling together Philip's socks, Florence sits on the floor of their bedroom, talking and fitting the soles of Franny's shoes along the soles of her feet. She is interested to note that all the shoes in the closet, Philip's and Franny's, sneakers and heels, are jumbled together. Suddenly she stops chattering and says, "I feel like I'm invading you. Are you sure you don't mind?" Franny laughs and nods and tells her not to worry. "Do you promise to tell me to go home the first moment I get tiresome?" Florence asks. "I promise." Her mock exasperation is reassuring. Florence says that her best friend in college was the most mysterious and beautiful woman she ever met, and the only man who ever treated her friend badly was the one she married. Marriage is something Florence doesn't understand at all. Florence mentions that she has saved over $6,000 since nursing school and wants to buy a little house and plant raspberry canes, but the prices of houses rise faster than her savings account. Franny says, "You know, it really was fascinating to look at houses with Philip. We went out every day with a realtor, so we really lost the sense of having our own life and began to feel like the right house was the key to everything. On the Sunday morning after we saw this one, which we both liked and which was empty, the agent took us to one a ways out of town. The owners were there, and they had a new baby about 10 days old. The place was spotless. There were lots of windows and awnings and arched doorways, and the place had a sort of Provençal aura about it, maybe because the cookbooks were in French. They took us all over the house, then out into the yard where they had planted all sorts of lilacs and the dwarf apple trees and bulbs. The house was overpriced, and we would have had to replace the furnace, but Philip fell so in love that he just had to have it. Even when the realtor told him this house was more of a bargain, Philip couldn't stop talking about how he felt there, so light and springy. I kept teasing him and saying that he wanted the chance to live their life better than they were doing it. She laughs. Well, I'm glad you got this house. It is beautiful. Philip loves it here now. Florence begins to eye Franny closely for symptoms of retreat, but Franny's interest and growing affection seem to meet hers at every level. Florence offers to pick up Franny's cleaning when she is downtown. Franny brings home butter from the market, which she knows Florence needs. Florence drops by next door once a day. Franny comes by only every other day or so, but comments spontaneously that she loves it when people drop by. Where they lived before, everyone was terrifically formal, always calling and making arrangements as if they expected to be entertained. Every time she sees Franny, Florence feels intelligent. Her new powers exhilarate her. Florence crosses the adjoining side yards on a rainy Saturday morning. Franny is intending to meet Philip at the hardware store and is waiting for the rain to let up. She pours Florence a cup of coffee. Won't he be annoyed if you're late? Florence asks, feeling nosy because Franny just doesn't gossip about her husband in that way. She does tell what he does, but never what he is like. Florence thinks this might be the result of so many years together. He'll love the chance to moon around the hardware store planning major renovations. Say, do you like the yellow slicker effect? Florence gestures toward the raincoat she has left by the door. I just bought it at the Army Navy. It feels like a 3-man pup tent, but I love it. Franny nods and sips her coffee. There is a letter next to her elbow, and the return address is illegible, although in a woman's hand. In a moment, Franny says, it's odd, you know. I haven't had a really intimate woman friend since the day Philip and I got married, though I'd had 3 or 4 the day before. There's a friend I've had since grammar school who must know more about me than my mother does, and yet there are these incredibly trivial things about my life and my feelings that I don't dare tell her, not to mention the more important things. It seems like once I let her in, even her, the door will be broken open forever, and Philip will be the loser. At once, Florence has an image of herself standing in the doorway, curious and unsure. That's what Franny means, she thinks. She is so embarrassed that she stays away for a whole week until Franny comes over the following Saturday afternoon and asks her to go swimming with them and then stay for dinner. She and Philip husk the corn, then she and Franny take either end of the garlic bread and butter until they meet in the middle. Philip hands her the lettuce to dry, and then Franny turns the spare ribs on the grill while Florence bastes them. They drink 2 6-packs of beer, they eat and drink in the gathering darkness of the side porch for a long time, until at last there are only voices. And then it goes on to say that they spend the evening together and she ends up sleeping over on the couch. And so their relationship is healed. They have gotten beyond the stage of wild talking and into the stage of companionable silence. Philip and Franny are not perfect. Philip can be garrulous and tends to repeat some of his jokes. Franny breaks dates at the last minute because she never writes anything down. Florence doesn't mind, even while feeling annoyed. She is glad that the honeymoon is over and the work of real friendship is about to begin. In October, there are even more newborns, and Florence has to give the hospital Franny and Philip's phone numbers so that she can be called when the other nurses succumb to the virus. October is the best month. It is crisp and dark outside, and the big neat house folds them in with light and warmth. In November, she volunteers for the second shift through Christmas because it will mean more money, and she needs a good excuse to get rid of the photographer she's dating, whom Franny and Philip doesn't think is good enough for her. She calls Franny at work when she can. After Christmas, Franny tells her that she and Philip are separating. Franny is very discreet. She tries not to encounter, Florence is very discreet. She tries not to encounter Philip in the neighborhood, and if she sees him before he sees her, she pretends to be occupied. When she absolutely can't avoid him, she speaks cordially, but with a certain distance, as if the sun were in her eyes. She wishes she had a car so that she might help Franny with her moving, or that she lived in a big place across town so that Franny could stay with her for a while at least. Franny is too happy to confide the details about the separation, and the apartment she finds is very small and very badly furnished. To Florence she says, "But I want a furnished place. It took me days to move my stuff into that empty house. I felt like I was being snapped up like a tasty morsel. This is perfect." She just hangs up her clothes. She speaks continually in the tones Florence remembers from the beginning of their friendship, as if she will abandon herself to merriment at any moment. Florence waits for her to speak about Philip, or rather about her life with Philip, for she often says now, "Philip must have my comb," or "Philip was in the market this afternoon." But she never does, even during the intimate moments of sharing dinner preparations or cleaning the previous tenant's leavings out of the closets and cupboards. Florence reminds herself that Franny has a basic reserve, especially about Philip, so that if anyone is to know, it will certainly be herself. Meanwhile, Franny's conversation is more earnest than ever. She talks about everything except the recent past. Some weeks pass. Florence is very curious. She brings a new boyfriend to Franny's apartment. When he, in his comradely, once-married, matter-of-fact way, asks Franny if she thinks she will go back to Philip, Florence sits very still and holds her breath. Franny shakes her head without a thought. They do not pursue the subject. It is almost as if the question is dull to them, or as if they both know the ins and outs of it so well that they needn't go on. Florence bites her lip at her own curiosity, and her admiration for Brian, both his experience and his directness, increases. The next day, she asks Franny what she thinks of Brian, and watches her closely to detect envy in her approval. There is none. In Sears, they pass a display of ribbed, sleeveless undershirts and baggy shorts. "Philip just loves those," says Franny. Such an elderly style seems so incongruous with Philip's natural elegance that Florence guffaws. "No, really," says Franny. "The whole family wears that stuff, and Philip's mother irons all their shorts." After this exchange, Florence feels oddly more hostile toward Philip, which is why when she sees him on the street a few days later and he smiles and pauses for a chat, she walks right past him. Florence spends many evenings with Franny. She takes the bus and often arrives panting and slapping in a flurry of snow as if on an adventure. She stays the night on the living room floor. "I wish you'd visit me," she asserts. "I could sneak you in and out under the cover of darkness." Franny never comes, though, and it is just as well. Nothing about Florence's carefully arranged, thoughtfully acquired apartment is as hospitable as Franny's temporary rooms. They make popcorn and crack beers, then turn out the lights and position their chairs before the bay window. Cars and semis rush past on the main thoroughfare nearby, and they make plans to jog, to swim, to learn to cook Middle Eastern food. Florence talks about Brian. Most of her remarks are open-ended so that Franny can simply fall into telling all about it if she wants to. She doesn't, even when Florence says, "If you ever want to talk about what happened, you can trust me completely. You know that, don't you?" Franny always nods. Florence can hardly help speculating, especially at home, alone in her own kitchen, staring out at Philip's stained glass windows. The thumps and sawings that occasionally sound from his house seem to her not the mysteries of the moment, but those of the past autumn, when she was so often inside, but never saw what was going on. She picks at the burned kernels in the bottom of the popcorn bowl. "You know what one of the mothers said to me today? They'd done Lamaze, I guess, she and her husband, and she said that when the pains got bad, he climbed up onto the labor table and held her head in his arms. She looked me full in the face and asked, 'How can my marriage not be perfect from now on? We were splendid together.' Philip and I lost a baby." Franny tips the beer can back and sips the last drops with her tongue. Florence runs one of the kernels round and round the buttery bowl. This is the moment. What Florence wishes to know is the story of their mundaneness, what was said over breakfast, and in what tone, what looks were exchanged, what noises Franny could not help listening to when she was tending her own affairs. Who would be the first to break a silence? "I was pre-diabetic without knowing it. She went full term, but when we got to the hospital, they said she had died in labor, and then they knocked me out." Franny speaks calmly, expecting Florence's expertise to fill in the details, which, regrettably, it does. "They should have suspected." She is professionally disapproving. "The doctor was an ass. It was a long time ago, almost 8 years. Needless to say, it was tragic, devastating, but how so?" Florence sips her beer and glances into Franny's face. No more on the subject is forthcoming. Brian joins them twice, but though he likes Franny, his pleasure in her company isn't as exquisite as Florence expects it to be. That he might sometimes be on the verge of criticizing Franny annoys her, because she is beginning to have so much fun with him that it can no longer be called fun. It encompasses many other things than, and opposite to, amusement. He tells a lot of stories. His past begins to assume the proportions of an epic to Florence. She likes his self-confidence and his ready flow of conversation, his thick curly hair and his willingness to be teased. She listens to all of his stories with interest. But when he talks about his ex-wife, she can't keep her attention on what he is saying. Images of Franny, Philip, their pale furniture, and their pale floors invade her imagination. "Marriage is such a mystery to me," she says idly. "Well, it's a mystery to me too, even though I sometimes think I can remember every minute of my own." "And you're going to describe them all one by one?" she smiles. "Only if you ask," he says. "And besides, there is so much else to cover." She pokes him in the ribs. "You don't want to hear it," he says. Every word," says she. "The past is always with you." God forbid. But she doesn't mean it. She will remember, for example, every moment of this talk. The fall of light through the hackberry bushes fixes his words and his tones permanently. His words and tones do the same for the light. At the hospital, she surprises herself by recalling things she did not know she had noticed. The color of Brian's socks, the titles of the books piled on his dashboard, what he almost ordered for dinner but decided against. She relates all of these details to Franny, and Franny notices how absorbed she is with Brian. She goes on to say, "And he thinks about what I might like to do, and he's always right. I must say that this care is rather thrilling. It's almost unmasculine." "I'm envious," replies Franny, and Florence, marveling at her good luck, demurs. "He does have something of a temper, though," she says. When Florence hangs up the phone, she realizes that Franny didn't sound envious. Florence smiles. She loves Franny completely. That evening, Brian says, "Doesn't your friend Franny work over at the U?" "Off-campus programs. How come?" "Someone mentioned her at lunch today." "What did they say?" Her voice rises, oddly protective and angry. Brian glances at her and smiles. Nothing, dear, just mentioned her name. Florence remains disturbed and later decides it's because she wants Franny. Franny's delight, conversation, thoughtfulness, all to herself. That her name can come up among strangers implies a life that fans away into the unknown. She wonders about Franny's activities in the intervals of her absence. She feels none of this jealousy with Brian. Franny calls her and asks her to go out the next morning for an early morning strawberry picking. The morning could not be fresher. Franny's new car is pearled with dew and smells inside of French bread. The strawberry patch is professionally laid out in neat rows, and among shiny dark leaves, the heart-like berries weigh into pale straw. The earth is springy and smells of damp. Two maples at the corner of the garden cast black, sharp-edged shadows. Everything else sparkles with such delight that Florence's vision vibrates. Ripe berries plop into their hands at a touch. Franny, it turns out, has brought champagne. And not only jam, she is saying, but a really delicious liqueur my friend has the recipe for. And look over there. Those two apricot trees bloomed this spring, and that peach. The one next to it is a Chinese chestnut. My friend lives here alone and hates to see it go to waste. In the fall, she says she has the best apples in the country, in the county. Franny shaded her eyes and looked across the field toward the house where her friend lived. I was hoping she'd come out. Anyway, last year there were 7 bushels on one tree alone. Franny, I've known you all these months and I never realized what an earth mother you are. I feel like I've missed something. Converts are the most ardent, you know. But don't you love the romance of the harvest? She sucks a berry off the stem. The romance of putting up 2 dozen quarts of tomatoes and 1 dozen quarts of beans in one evening when the temperature and the humidity are both 95? The romance of opening a jar of strawberry jam in the middle of December. I'd call that the romance of consumption. Call it what you like. Franny bites into another strawberry and glances toward the still house again. They sit under one of the maples with their shoes off, tearing hunks of bread. Champagne sizzles in their bowl of berries, and the butter is still cool and dewy. Florence is excited. She thinks she will penetrate the marriage mystery at last, then is ashamed of her unseemly curiosity. Still, she says, Brian and I saw Philip yesterday. A lie. How is Brian, anyway? Are you in love yet? We've agreed not to say. He's very compelling, though, especially at 6 a.m. when I think he's asleep and he grabs my foot as I'm sneaking out of bed. I thought I was going to jump right out of my skin. Do you talk? Nonstop. There is a pause here, where Franny might mention her conversational history with Philip, but instead she rolls over and closes her eyes. Florence presses ahead. I actually spoke to him. Philip, I mean. I said hello. He said hello. Brian said hello. She looks at Franny. Nothing. He is so boyish looking. From a distance, he looks about 18 and getting younger. That's another thing about Brian. Being prematurely grizzled makes him look very wise. Are you asleep? Franny shakes her head and slips her hand into the bowl. She says. Do you ever miss him? This is so bold that Florence blushes. Franny shrugs. How's Brian's work going? Brian's work is to figure out how many ways the hospital can use the computer it has just purchased. Terrifically, said Florence. Now they're thinking of renting time to the county and making a profit on the purchase. But they bought it with county money. The left hand doesn't know what the right hand is doing. Florence sighs. You know, you always turn the conversation over to me, and I always rise to the bait. More strawberries? Franny holds out the bowl. and Florence gives up. They talk about a new movie Franny wants to go to, then about the 7-pound twins Florence saw the previous week. Florence begins to think of Brian and to wonder what time it is. The champagne in the bottom of the crystal bowl is flat. Just then, Franny says, "I hate the way Philip and I admired ourselves all the time." Florence picks up the napkins and the champagne cork and the wrappings from the loaf of bread, and then it is time to depart. "Well, I don't think life has passed me by." Florence, in her bathrobe, strikes a pose on the stairs. Brian looks up from his book, elaborately distracted. Florence lifts her chin. Lately, they have been debating whether life has passed Brian by. "No, bitch," he says, just containing a smile. "Life hasn't passed you by." Florence exhibits an ostentatious bit of calf. "You were standing in the road and it ran you right over." Florence laughs and runs up the steps. At the top, she hits the light switch, plunging Brian into darkness, and then she throws herself diagonally across the bed. When Brian comes in, she is pretending to be asleep. He walks around the bed. "I'm so comfortable," she groans. "You'll have to sleep on the floor." She stretches out her arms. "There's no room." "I see a spot," he says. She can hear the smile in his voice, and she feels her body contract with the tension of imminent laughter. Then he launches himself diagonally across her. The weight of his body is delightful. For a moment, they are still, and she seems to feel the muffled beat of his heart. Then they are laughing and floundering across one another. They have been laughing all evening, and this laughter, Florence knows, will bloom smoothly into lovemaking. "I love you," he says. He has said it often lately. "Do you mind if I reciprocate at once?" she asks. "Not at all. I love you too." Ah, they snuggle down and pull up the covers. Just when Florence thinks it is about to begin, when her skin seems to rise to meet the palm of his hand, he squeezes her closely and says, "Speaking of love..." "Please do," says she. "Your friend seems to have a new one." "Which friend?" Florence's eyes are closed, and she is trying to guess where his hands are and where they will alight. "Franny," he says. Florence opens her eyes and sits up. "Oh, really?" she says. "Who?" And then, in a less casual tone, "She didn't tell me." "A woman in the art school, I think." "Which part do you only think?" "What?" "What's questionable? Love, art school, or woman?" "Art school." "Oh, I thought you'd be glad. They look very happy. I saw them having tea this afternoon." "Oh, I'm sorry I told you." "Don't be. Come here, please. We've had such a good time tonight." "We really have." She kisses him on the nose and smiles, but in the end they settle into bed without making love. Florence says, "I think if we hadn't had such a good time tonight, then I wouldn't be able to imagine their every moment together." But she says it quietly, knowing that Brian has fallen asleep. She had intended to drop in at Franny's the next morning, a Saturday, on her way to the store, but now that seems like she'd be rushing by for the details. She doesn't know what she would say. All she can think of are challenges and accusations. She stops on the way home, leaving Brian's car at the end of the block. No one is around, and she sees that Franny's belongings are in the street. The plant stand, 2 boxes of books, clothes in a large pile seem especially vulnerable. Florence looks around for Franny's winter coat to throw over them, but she can't find it. While she is standing there, Franny's car pulls up. The other woman is with her, and Franny's "hello" is wildly exuberant. Florence attributes this to the presence of the other woman. Franny introduces them. The woman's name, Helen Mirden, is certainly conservative, even old-fashioned, and her thighs are too fat. Otherwise, she is very pretty. Florence listens for Helen Mirden to say, "I've heard so much about you," but she does not, in fact. smile again after the introduction, although her inspection of Florence, whose clothes are a mess and whose hair is dirty, is frank and lengthy. Helen Mirren is a person of style. "I didn't know you were moving," Florence says heartily, thinking of a recent evening together. "Darling, it's very sudden. The house is terrific. Remember where we went for strawberries? Helen's just put in the most beautiful red enameled wood-burning stove. It's practically her place. She moved in so long ago, and the rent hasn't been raised in years, so it should cost next to nothing to live there." "That's great. You'll have to come over as soon as you can. I'm so surprised." Helen Mirren is moving away toward the apartment building. She exchanges with Florence a suspicious sidelong glance before passing her and climbing the porch steps. "Maybe I will come over," asserts Florence. "Or we could have lunch together downtown." "Can I help you move? I've got Brian's car." "We can handle it, I think," announces Helen Mirren from the porch. "We're nearly finished." She goes into the building. "Helen's terribly shy," says Franny, looking after her. "You must be good friends with her to be moving in. We met almost my first week on the job last fall. Sometimes I feel I've known her since kindergarten, and sometimes I feel we've just met." "Franny, what about this?" Helen is holding an object up at the screen window, at the window screen. Franny turns to squint at it. "I better go. Brian will be expecting his lunch," Florence says. Franny smiles at her. "Not that I'll make it for him, I mean. I'm not his slave, of course. I just went to the store." Franny continues to smile. "He is a nice man." "I think we're in love now." "You told me that last week." "Yes, right." It is impossible to leave. At length, Florence simply turns away and runs down the street to the car. She imagines Franny and Helen meeting in the doorway of the empty apartment, the same height, kissing. Florence is drawn outside by the odors of cut grass and privet. Brian should be coming soon to take her swimming. It is a glorious day, and Philip is snipping his hedge, his back to her, his progress slow and neat. The grass he has mown is already bagged and sitting on the curb. Before going back inside, Florence watches him for a minute. She hasn't spoken to him since her spring antagonism. Now she fears that she has found out the secret of his marriage, and he would know by looking at her. He sets down his shears and wipes his face in his shirt. When she turns to go inside, he calls to her. "What do you think, Florence? Shall I trim it into birds and perfect spheres? What is that called again? Topiary. How's the baby business? Bouncing. How are you? Sorry not to see you more often, and this is your slow season. I haven't been home much, I'll admit." "Ah, love." He speaks only with ordinary irony. "I've been around enough to hear a lot of thumps and banging across the way. Are you haunted over there?" "Only by the spirit of remodeling. I took out the kitchen bar and put down new linoleum, and let's see, put in some new windows and repainted a little." "My goodness. Would you like to see it?" He has also a new sofa covered in a pattern of green leaves and lemons. The place is even more spacious now than before, if that is possible. Philip's furniture, director's chairs and yellow canvas deck chairs, recalls the ocean. His floors recall sandy beaches. Nothing recalls Franny, and Florence suddenly feels calmer. He has brought his desk downstairs and set it up where he can survey his solitary realm. There is an air of satisfaction about the furnishings and their arrangement, as if they have spread themselves this way and that, unhindered. "I should have come over sooner," Florence says, not remembering till then that she wasn't invited to come over. Still, she feels that she has missed the transformation itself, and having missed it, she will never know what it was that has been transformed. "You know how nosy I am," she adds. But Philip has gone to the kitchen window. "Look over there. See that little building? I bought that at a farm sale for $30. It's an old chicken house. Solid, though. I'm insulating it and putting down a tile floor, and then I'm going to install a Franklin stove and run lights out there and make it into my study. No phone, no nothing. Grapes growing all over it, a couple of easy chairs, a nice rug. You've got all this space to yourself right here. He glances at her, amused that she hasn't gotten the point, and shrugs. The spirit of remodeling is pretty persistent, you know. It's so different from the way it was, she says, because Philip's cool realm, oddly, invites confidences in a way that Franny's hospitality did not. And it's not that I don't like it. It's refreshing, but I loved the rusty red sofa and all the chairs drawn up around the coffee table. That kitchen bar was so ugly, awful 1950s modernizing, but it really made the place cozy. I was looking at her quizzically. Don't you think it was nice just to sit around in the evening with most of the lights off and drink brandy and talk? I loved it, especially when it rained or snowed those times, and even my apartment seemed too far away. Did you like it? Our friendship was very pleasant. I didn't feel like just your friend. I felt like your child or your sister or something. Should I be embarrassed? Those nights seemed so self-contained. Franny mooning over Helen, me mooning over Franny. He speaks with a teasing edge. I don't think we were very kind to you, Florence. Weren't you? I thought you were. Florence swallows bitterly. We needed someone else to talk to about unimportant things. Florence turns away quickly and peers energetically out the window. We needed you, Florence. It was nice to have you fall in love with us and admire us. It was a relief to talk about something else besides the central issue. Do you understand what I mean? No one was happy but me. She looks at him again and he shakes his head. The smile that lingers on his boyish face is betrayed by that small gesture and disappears. Florence lets his serious gaze hold her until he releases her with another smile. Brian pulls up next door and gets out of the car. Florence does not move. Is that the secret of marriage? She asks. One of them. Brian takes off his sunglasses and throws them on the seat and then steps around the car. What's another one? Maybe that all the secrets are never disclosed. And another? That it's worth finding out for yourself. Brian raises his finger to her doorbell. She shouts, "Here I am, Brian, I'm over here." And that's the end. So, what do you think? What's the secret of marriage? Did you like the story?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Good.
I would say the secret of marriage is keeping commitments and not revealing private information. I think you can talk about it as long as you don't reveal private secrets between you and your spouse.
Uh-huh. How do people react to that?
Isn't that what happened? Isn't that why it ended up divorced? Is because they never talked, you know, the secret was kept inside the walls of the house. And perhaps if they had talked about it outside, and the marriage broke up because of the secret, more, you know. I don't even see a friendship, I guess. Even if the marriage would have broken up, there wasn't even a friendship between Philip and Franny afterwards. The relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Where even if it had been talked about, perhaps there would still have been a relationship.
What does Philip say at the very end? It went by so quickly. Three things.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've had that feeling too. He said, I don't think we were very kind to you. And she says, I thought you were. He said, we needed someone else to talk to about unimportant things. She turns away. And then he says, we needed you, Florence. It was nice to have you fall in love with us and admire us. It was a relief to talk about something else besides the central issue. Do you understand what I mean? And then she says, no one was happy but me. And then there's a little silence, and she sees Brian coming next door. And then she says, is that the secret of marriage? And he says, one of them. And then she says, what's another one? Maybe that all the secrets are never disclosed. And another one? That it's worth finding out for yourself. No one was happy but me. And then, well, the smile that lingered on his boyish face is betrayed by that small gesture. He looks at him and he shakes his head. She looks at him and he shakes his head. So he shakes his head. And I take it shaking your head means no, doesn't it? And it doesn't mean nodding, it means shaking. So he shakes his head no when she says no one was happy but me. And then she says, is that the secret of marriage? And he says, one of them.
She's not asking, is that the secret, just the success of marriage. She's just asking, is that the secret? The secret hidden in marriage. Okay?
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was nice to have you fall in love with us and admire us so we didn't have to talk about the central issue. I don't know.
Hmm. Well, she's been trying to find out the secret the whole story.
Yeah.
So maybe that's answering her question. Rather than saying, it's, like you were saying, it's not the secret to a successful marriage, it's the secret of the marriage.
Of the marriage.
It's a double.
Yeah, it's probably goes both ways.
Right.
What, in these few lines, does she learn more than she learned in all those hundreds of hours with his wife, with Franny, about that marriage?
Yeah. I think she learned how she fit into the picture.
Yeah, she certainly learns how she fits into the picture.
Which wasn't what she expected.
No. Mm-hmm. No, and then she feels terrible, I imagine.
Yeah.
Used.
And because he says we were not very kind to you.
Mm-hmm.
We used you.
Mm-hmm. But all along she thought they were being kind to her.
Right.
I think that this is the real surprise. She never felt used until this revelation.
Yeah.
Realizing the real situation.
Yeah. Which is surprising, isn't it? I mean, that she wouldn't have sensed that, or that, I mean, were they
well,
such good...
Except for Franny never talked. Franny never told her stories. Florence was always telling her stories, and Franny never told her stories. Not she told, you know, idle conversation, but never told her stories, you know.
Yeah.
Who she was.
Yeah.
So, you know, how she, you know, she, and I think she, towards the end of the relationship, she's trying to get Franny to tell me your story, but Franny never does. It was always one-sided.
And there are two times, I thought, where Franny started to.
Mm-hmm.
Once at the end of the morning, picking strawberries and drinking champagne. Oh, I couldn't drink champagne in the morning if you paid me $100, but anyhow, there was a confidence that was shared then. Was that the one about... That wasn't the one about the baby. Oh, that was the one... I hated the way we were always admiring ourselves.
Right.
And Florence could have said, what do you mean by that? Or say more about that. But instead she gathered up the leavings of the picnic and got ready to leave. And also when they were sitting... I guess it was sitting looking out the window of Franny's new apartment, when Franny said, we had a baby, or we lost a baby once. And again, Florence didn't pursue it. And how could they have been friends for so long and not know that Franny had carried a baby full term and it had been born dead? I think that would be something that you'd learn earlier, typically, wouldn't you?
Be friends that long and not know that Franny was in love with another woman. I mean, you know, that, I mean, it's just such a central part of the woman's life, and not, you know, it's like
she's moving in. I mean, you know, it's like, and how he had that relationship with Helen Meredith for so long.
Mm-hmm. And then she remembers when she goes by and accidentally, you know, goes by her house on a Saturday morning and finds all of her possessions out in the front yard again. Yeah. And she'd had dinner with her that same week, but didn't know she was moving. So there was a real fault there, wasn't there, somehow?
She says all through the story how she wants to know, but then, as you say, the two times she has a chance to know. So she's in a way using Franny too, because she kind of uses Franny as someone who listens to her.
Mm-hmm.
She seems so pleased that Franny admired her and wanted to hear her, that I don't think she was very sensitive to as to how to listen to Franny at all. She was gaining so much by that relationship and meeting.
Mm-hmm.
To have someone pleased with her.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't think Franny wanted her to know either.
Franny is, well, I mean, that's the question. How much, I mean, should Franny have confided about her marriage? Should she have confided about her doubts or her falling in love with Helen Meredith? Or would she have if she'd had a sufficiently sensitive ear listening to her? I love it when early on in the story it says that she's ecstatic.
In conversation.
Yeah, in conversation. Because she feels so brilliant with these new friends that make her feel so brilliant as a conversationalist. That she's
later when it's all superficial. Yes. It's all unimportant things. And here she's valued it so much. Ouch, that would hurt so bad. To think that you had these important friends and they viewed you as just somebody to bounce trivialities off of.
Yeah.
Ouch.
Yeah.
But it says, who remembered this line exactly? Florence grows ecstatic with conversation. Mm-hmm. Somebody said that, yeah.
Yeah, there's a flaw. Florence gets a false sense of intimacy from Brandon, who's able to apparently behave as a good listener but never a revealer.
Uh-huh.
And I got the impression that Florence was really looking for somebody to be with, to be intimate with. And so she's lulled by someone who is a very good listener and gets a false sense of intimacy that crashes.
Uh-huh.
And so
I think that's why her and Philip kind of bond in the end, because they both thought they had an intimacy with Franny they didn't have.
Mm-hmm.
They both were in the same position. And she even calls Florence even calls Helen Meredith the other woman.
Uh-huh.
Like it was, you know, like she'd invaded her intimacy too, you know. So she was the other woman for both of them.
But Franny was very consistent in her lack of revealing. It's not that she just didn't talk about her marriage. She also didn't talk about her relationship. She was a very consistent character throughout the story about what she was ready to reveal that was important.
Although she did reveal very early on, I had three or four intimate women friends until the day I married Philip, and none from that day on. And she drew that line there. So that was talking, that was saying, sharing something, I think, and sort of framing up what could have been a conversation to pursue. I got the impression from Philip that he thought that Philip and Franny did, in fact, talk about the trouble in their relationship intimately when Florence wasn't around.
Yeah, I don't mean that. I mean that I guess the betrayal of a man-woman relationship and there being another woman, I mean, when you're a husband and wife relationship and then have that kind of a betrayal, from what I understand of most men who go through it, it's what we never had the intimacy is usually the assumption by the male.
Hmm.
That what they thought they had, they never really had. And so that was what I meant. I didn't say that she didn't talk, but that they both had another woman, the other woman,
yeah.
The other woman for both of them.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Interesting. What do you think about the spaces? I mean, the Philip spaces that he set up were what, characteristically cool, spacious, you know, blonde and white colors, more and more space, take out more and more stuff, have more and more space. And his presence was cool. And then at the end it says something about his cool way of being, somehow that his space was more inviting of intimacy than all of Franny's oak table with oak chairs and cups of tea and
hospitality,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. But I always felt that Florence was in their space all the time. I mean, it was almost an invasion, particularly at the beginning of her being there all the time. And when it talked about her just sort of following her around the house and sitting on the floor and you...
While she's balling socks. And
yeah, it was like... I mean, sort of an indication of there never really being mutuality in that. Mm-hmm. In that, almost, I'm hesitant to say friendship because I'm not sure it was, but she just was in their space.
It drove you crazy. Right. Right, it would have driven me crazy too, I think.
The description of that strawberry field, mm-hmm, reminded me a lot of the house, of Philip's house too. There was this orderliness, this kind of perfection. Made you wonder what Franny is drawn to.
Mm-hmm.
But she is drawn to people who are quite different than she is.
And then do you remember what Franny called the perfect space for her?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, her own apartment.
Her apartment. Yeah. With somebody else's furniture. You know, it was a furnished, little, tiny, crowded apartment.
Yeah.
She said, it's just perfect. What's it perfect for? Who is it perfect for? For anyone.
Yeah.
I mean, it's an apartment, a furnished apartment that anyone could go and live in for a while. So who do we think Franny is out of that?
Maybe Franny never got to define herself, you know. That's what I mean. She had nothing to say.
So what about that wedding dress at the beginning then? Stuffed with blue tissue paper. Lying on the floor, on the grass, on the
left
front.
Left out overnight.
What?
Left out overnight.
Left out overnight.
Mm-hmm. Interesting symbol of their marriage, how it wasn't that important as a dress.
Yeah, and the dress, I think it was important that the dress was stuffed with paper so that you could see the shape of it. It looked like there was a body in it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't think we know much about Franny at all.
Mm-hmm.
Franny's happiest, or there's some symbolism that says that Franny is either this sort of, her wedding, her marriage, symbolized by her wedding dress, is this wedding dress that's stuffed with blue tissue paper. She's declares the perfect home for herself to be a little apartment furnished with somebody else's furniture. She felt like she was being snapped up by the big beautiful house like a tasty morsel. This is a woman that's got a long way to go. Before she sort of claims herself. I mean, can you imagine allowing your space to be involved, to be invaded the way the way Florence invaded her space? And yet she somehow needed that or allowed that or encouraged.
She regarded it as her space. And she left her little apartment to go and move into one with the strawberry lady.
Yeah. Helen Mirden.
Yes.
Came into her external space, but never into her internal space.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. I think.
I think you're right. When we didn't know much about Franny, but I'm not sure Franny knew much about Franny.
Yeah.
And she was seeking people to sort of fill that void. And I wonder sometime about her relationship with Helen Mirden. That we don't hear much of anything about that. And what kind of strong person this must be that's going to fill another void. And when will Franny figure out who she is enough to fill part of that for herself?
You sort of have the sense that she's trying on another life.
Yeah, yes. Well, she's in transition. So yeah. I think what you're seeing from her is typical of anyone in transition.
Yeah.
Maybe not too concerned about surroundings or just preoccupied with this move rather than the friends. Or she kind of just lets it all happen. And she's absorbed in her transition. That's what I see.
You have a sense that it's not the last time all of her possessions are going to be sitting out in somebody's front yard.
No. What's the title of the story?
Is The Pleasure of Her Company.
Have you ever met someone who really has the skill to kind of almost collect people?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because I have one acquaintance that kind of moves from friendship to friendship, and she knows I attend them all, but you feel like you're being collected, sort of.
Uh-huh.
She puts it, and it's Franny feels a little that way, you know, mm-hmm. that she knows how to collect someone.
Well, she's collecting them, not to keep anyway. She seems to be.
Yeah, but I mean, she has skills mm-hmm. for drawing other people
yeah.
out, and yet you never really know her.
And do you have the sense that if Franny had been more present to herself or more self-knowing, that she would have been able to talk about her marriage in a healthier way and disclose maybe? I mean, I'm not sure. I think that the skill of the listener is really important and that's shown here. I mean, one thing that Jane Smiley tells us is that Brian listens so well. And what a gift that is. And, you know, when you tell your story, and Brian shares his story too. Brian shares intimacy. And so Florence has a sort of healthy enough self that she can share and she can listen and give and take, and she falls in love with Brian. And in the end, you have the sense that they're probably going to get married. And the third secret of marriage that's given to us by Philip is
find out if you try it.
And Philip can share intimacy enough to just say, while he's out there being his cool self, clipping his hedge and sort of sardonic and, you know, not intimate in the clutching, close sense with a hot breath of intimacy, he can say, don't you realize that we were using you and that we were both trying not to talk about our troubles? So he is a healthy enough person that he could talk about his marriage to some extent in an honest way. The person who was struggling to grow but probably hadn't gotten there yet, I think, was probably Franny, who was the hot light that kept the people like a moth, you know, were drawn to. But
I don't know how much Florence really wanted to know about Franny, because remember when they said, when Brian mentioned that Franny was doing something with someone else, there was something that indicated that Florence was jealous of the idea that she had a life beyond
mm-hmm.
her two.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe Franny sensed that, and it wasn't a safe person to share with, because maybe there was this possessiveness that Florence...
Yeah, I think Florence was in love with Franny.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a lot of language that implies that Florence was falling in love with Franny, too. And she was jealous. It says she wasn't jealous of the rest of Brian's life, but she was jealous of the rest of Franny's life. And why is that? What makes us jealous of our beloveds?
She sensed that Franny wasn't opening up to her.
Yeah.
So she knew that there was a reason to be jealous of someone else in Franny's life, where she knew she was intimate with Brian. So she wasn't jealous of anything else
yeah.
in his life.
She and Brian were honest together, and they trusted each other. So Brian could have lunch with somebody else, and there wasn't a need for jealousy.
But I think Florence did try to get Franny that one time. I mean, it's like the questions she was just firing at her with the strawberry thing. It's like I couldn't believe Franny like wasn't going to answer one of them.
Yeah.
Just didn't even look at it at one point.
Right, right. Rolled over, looked away. Ate strawberries, said,
Do you think, though, Franny had taken her to that strawberry patch to sort of show her in Helen's house and let her know that something else was in her life but couldn't
bring herself to say it yet.
Yeah, I mean, she took her to Helen's house.
Yeah.
And then ultimately, as they were beginning to pack up the picnic, she did say something intimate. And Florence didn't pick up on it.
I think that's one of the nice things about the story, because even though I agree that Franny, you know, maybe not very well developed, still there are times at which each of them block the communication. So it's not all, you know, it's in a way about the struggle for communication, because they each have times that they sort of, I mean, Franny sort of is this enigma, but then when she does open up, Florence just does not. Isn't able to pick up on
it. Yeah, that's right. Well, we're long overdue. So all these insights are wonderful. Thank you very much.